This podcast is brought to you by Bloomberg Law. For more information about our professional services for the legal industry, please call 212-617-6569.
This is the Bloomberg Law Bankruptcy Review. I'm Lee Pacquiao. I'm joined now, as always, by Bloomberg News bankruptcy columnist Bill Rochelle. Be sure to check out his bankruptcy column available on BloombergLaw.com, and it's also on the Bloomberg Terminal. We have three items to run through today, and we have news on Kodak. The Kodak bankruptcy now has an official creditors committee. Bill, do you think the committee's composition is going to influence the direction of the case? Is this like Hostess Brands?
Well, yes, I think it is, albeit perhaps in a somewhat different direction. In the Kodak case, it looks to me like, on balance, the seven members on the creditors committee would be probably generally inclined, for the most part, to allow the company to try to continue its business rather than selling out everything. First off, let's note that there are two on the committee that have or will have claims arising from the termination of pension plans. First off, we have the Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation that will take some kind of a hickey if pension plans are terminated. And also, one of the Kodak pension plans itself is on the committee. Next, we have U.S. Bank, which serves as indenture trustee for four issues of notes and debentures. Now, that's interesting because the bank is really, in that sense, the primary representative of public debt holders on the committee. In addition to that, we have a couple of trade suppliers, and then also we have Sony Pictures, as well as Walmart. And, of course, people who continue doing business, whether it be as a supplier or as a customer, are typically inclined to want to try to help the company stay in business. This seems to me as though it was a rather reasonably constituted creditors committee, and one, if anything, that is, shall we say, typical in Chapter 11 cases and probably will be inclined to let Kodak play out its string, trying to stay in business, reorganizing around the printing aspect of its technology.
Bill, did they pick professionals yet for the committee?
Not that I know of.
All right. Moving on, we have an interesting situation developing in the Washington Mutual case. The bankruptcy judge said she will likely retract unkind words she said about the note holders. This is unusual. Bill, fill us in on the details.
Yeah, here's the deal. We have to go back in time to September, when bankruptcy Judge Walrath in Delaware wrote a 139-page opinion explaining in excruciating detail why she could not and would not approve what was then the sixth version of WaMu's Chapter 11 plan. And by the way, once finally confirmed and implemented, it will distribute $7 billion to creditors. So, you know, in view of the fact of how much money is hanging in the balance here, you can imagine that creditors are mighty eager to get the plan confirmed. After her mammoth opinion was handed down, she had a mediator appointed, and lo and behold, the mediator brought in a global settlement with virtually all of the contending parties that resulted in a seventh plan, which is currently scheduled for confirmation. I think it's the 16th of February. In this brand new global settlement agreement, there is a provision which requires Walrath to remove, delete, shall we say, 30 pages of her opinion from September. Now, here's what that was all about. At the time, shareholders were contending that there was reason to have a lawsuit against a bunch of note holders based upon allegations that they traded in debt of WaMu based upon non-public information that they gained through negotiating prior settlements. Walrath discussed this in excruciating detail in her opinion. As I said, about 30 pages of the opinion was devoted to the issue. At the bottom line, Judge Walrath concluded that there was sufficient reason to allow a lawsuit to be brought by the shareholders against the note holders based upon these allegations of insider trading. As I said, one of the provisions in the now global settlement agreement, which includes the shareholders, is that the judge must delete that portion of her opinion as though it never happened. And so Judge Walrath has taken the necessary steps by asking the federal district judge to remand the opinion to her because it was taken up on appeal to the district court. She does not have the power to remove her language from the opinion unless and until that part is remanded to her. Now, here is the deal. Just because people settle, it is not the law that the judge must, shall we say, undo, delete, revise prior rulings made in a case. Sometimes you will find judges simply say, no, I won't do it. If you don't like it, I thought it was the right decision, and if you think I was wrong, you must appeal. Now, I'm going to have to wait a while here to see exactly how Judge Walrath handles the issue. Perhaps she will sit there and lean back in her chair and say, well, you know, on further consideration, you brought other facts and arguments to life, so I guess maybe I was wrong in the first place, and there really is no reason for suspicion about insider trading. I suppose if she does that, well, you know, that certainly makes it proper for her to delete her prior opinion. But at the same time, it may raise questions about why she did it in the first place. You know, it's rather seldom that you find judges do a complete about-face on some issue as critical to the case as this was. Ergo, what I see here, Lee, is going to be an interesting situation in which a judge is put in a ticklish position because the $7 billion settlement to be implemented is dependent upon her removing these provisions from her September opinion. And as I said, in these circumstances, it's not altogether clear that judges are required to do so. And as I said, in some instances, they won't. I am going to be very eager to see how Judge Walrath handles this issue when the subject comes back to her and she has the opportunity, I guess, at the confirmation hearing to retract her prior opinion.
And finally, the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut has agreed on an exchange offer with debt holders. Does this solve the financial problems for the long haul, or are they going to be back in trouble in some period of time?
Well, very good question. I think the answer is it kicks the can down the road. That's been what has happening a lot recently with respect to distressed companies. The lenders know that if you push too hard, you got a bankruptcy. And so in many cases, what they do simply is to put off the problem, hoping that in the meantime, economic conditions will have improved so that the company can get out of its financial straits on its own authority. In this instance, what we have is the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut. It is a Indian tribal-owned casino, and it is located on tribal land. And therein lies the problem, because it is not altogether clear, in fact probably doubtful, that if creditors went push to shove, could put the gaming authority or the casino into bankruptcy, because it is in essence an entity of a sovereign nation, and it is not located on U.S. territory. It is rather on an Indian land in Connecticut. This gave the debt holders rather less leverage than they would have were it an ordinary casino operating, say, in Nevada. Further, there's an additional problem here because the casino can only be operated by Indians, and therefore, it simply is, I suspect, infeasible for the debt holders to take over ownership. What we have here is, in essence, agreement with a majority of the bondholders where the maturity will be extended for 3 or 4 years on nearly $1.1 billion of debt. The exchange offer is interesting in the sense that it rather substantially increases the interest rate payable on the debt. The amount of increase in the interest rate is varies from issue to issue, but it is in some cases more than a 4% increase in the interest rate. Now, you would think with such a whopping increase in the interest rate, this would basically be a dollar-for-dollar exchange that would not be viewed as a distressed exchange, but that's not how Standard & Poor's see it. They are calling it a distressed exchange because they do not believe that the increase in the interest rate compensates for the extension of the maturities. This is a I suppose, a rather reasonable way to get out of a sticky problem as we sit here right now, because the short-term alternatives would have been a default as soon as March, and then surely, I think, a default in April, because that was when some public debt comes due. And as we were just explaining, that would give the debt holders not a whole heck of a lot of the usual leverage that they have when a casino cannot pay its debt. I suppose this is a reasonable way to handle the problem. It will be also very interesting to see exactly how these bonds trade in the future. But for the time being, at least, the trading value of the bonds has picked up after this exchange offer was announced. By the way, it is not an absolutely sure thing that the exchange offer will be approved. As I said, there are more than half of the bondholders overall who have agreed. But depending upon the particular issue, to be able to implement the exchange offer, you have to have approval from between 75 and 90% of all of the holders. So let's hold our breath. The first deadline is the 6th of February, so we're going to know relatively soon whether this thing flies.
All right, that's what we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the cases or issues we just discussed, go check out Bills.com. It's available on BloombergLaw.com, and it's also on the Bloomberg Terminal. Thanks for listening.
Copyright 2012 Bloomberg Finance LP, all rights reserved. The views expressed herein are those of the speakers and not of Bloomberg Finance LP. These discussions are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as legal advice, which has to be addressed to particular facts and circumstances involved in any given situation. Bloomberg Finance LP and its affiliated entities do not take any responsibility for the content contained herein and do not make any representation or warranty as to its completeness or accuracy.